For 125 years, four generations of one family have been delivering the news to the citizens of Adair County, Iowa. Today, the Adair County Free Press and the family behind it. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. The new documentary, The Seide Report, Life and Times of an Iowa Icon, premieres on Wednesday on Iowa Public Television. This hour, we'll explore the work and legacy of the Seide family and reflect on what a newspaper means to a small town. I'll talk with documentarian Laura Bauer-Bergmeier, June Bauer, author of a companion book to the documentary, and Linda Seide, editor and publisher of the Adair County Free Press. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. This year marks 125 years since two members of the Seide family founded a newspaper in Adair County, Iowa. Since that time, the newspaper based in Greenfield has been owned and operated by a member of the Seide family. Four generations. A new documentary, The Seide Report, Life and Times of an Iowa Icon, tells the story of this remarkable family and their newspaper, and it premieres on Wednesday evening at 8:30 on Iowa Public Television. I need to disclose that IPTV is an underwriter of Iowa Public Radio. And with me now is the producer and writer of the documentary, Laura Bauer-Bergmeier. Hello, Laura. Laurel. Sorry.
Hi. That's okay. How are you? Thank you.
I'm good. Thank you so much for being here today.
Sure. I'm glad to be here.
When did you get the idea to make a documentary about the Adair County Free Press?
It was back in 2010. I love working on documentaries, especially historical documentaries. And I was Christmas shopping in my hometown. I live near Creston, Iowa. And there were these beautiful calendars with wonderful black and white images on them. And I looked at them and thought, wow, these would make a great, you know, somehow I thought they could be a great project for Iowa Public Television. And they were wonderful images of small town Iowa, and just to me represented, you know, so many small towns across the country. So I called, I looked on the back of the calendar and it said the Adair County Free Press. And I called Linda Seide. And when I got a hold of her, she said there were thousands more images like them, and that's kind of how it started.
Wow. And we will talk a lot more about these remarkable images in a little while. We'll also be talking with Linda Seide, who is now the editor and publisher of the Adair County Free Press. But let's go back in time and talk about this newspaper and the family that has been involved with it for 125 years. When you started digging into the history of the paper, what did you think?
Well, I loved the legacy part of it. You know, I love small town newspapers, but the fact that this family were really pioneers in the newspaper industry in Iowa. And so that, you know, seeing these images was great, but learning about the legacy of the Seide family. And I had always been familiar with Hugh Seide, especially because of his work with Time Magazine. Which we can go into more, but, you know, so I knew about the Seide family, but I thought that legacy was such a special story to tell.
Absolutely. And so we go back, the story goes clear back to 1889 with the first two generations of the Seide family that got involved in the newspaper with John Seide, who came from Canada.
Right.
And his
right.
son, E.J. Seide, who was already in the United States and, mm-hmm. and fairly nearby. And they decided that together they would start a newspaper in Adair County, Iowa, of all places.
Right. Right. Yeah. Because E.J. had been working in Creston a little bit on a paper and he decided, you know, why would our family not try this? And so he started that with his father, John, as you mentioned. And it started from there and went through several generations of great journalists and great photographers as well.
Absolutely. Well, and Ken, and he also went by K.H.
Correct.
Seide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was the son of E.J.
Mm-hmm.
And when he took over the paper, it sounds like it became really his life's passion and his life's work.
Definitely. It was something he came back from college because they, during the Depression, they had to use his college money to help save the newspaper at that time. And his father asked if he would come back, and he did. And he spent the rest of his life at the newspaper. and really was the person that started photography with the newspaper, and you know, which are where those images came from. And so I really looked to KH as a very important part of the story.
And he had two sons who never thought they would go into the newspaper business.
Right, right. Well, I think it was something, you know, when they first started at Iowa State, they both were thinking of engineering, and then they soon realized that journalism was more of what they were fitted towards. And they grew up working at the newspaper as young men and working and sweeping floors and doing all sorts of jobs at the Free Press. So it was always a family affair. I think probably deep down inside, one of them knew that they would take over the business. And that's what eventually would happen.
And these are the men, Ed and Hugh Seide. And they are the men that really form the heart of this documentary. And just remarkable brothers, both remarkable journalists. I am struck by the fact that they both graduated from Iowa State University and they both started working in journalism. But when it came time for one of them to take over the newspaper, they got together and sort of hashed it out. Do we know how they decided which one would take over the paper?
Well, I think because Ed was the elder son, he always figured that he would come home. I think that was something they were working at the Omaha World Herald at the time. And maybe a little bit after that. But I think he just always figured he was the eldest. It was something he figured he would come home and do. And I think if he didn't, Hugh said that he would have done the same thing. He would have continued that legacy. But I think for Ed, it was just something he kind of felt destined to do.
And they both felt that the role of this newspaper in Greenfield, in Adair County, was incredibly important. Can you sum up sort of what you see as their philosophy?
Well, I think they really felt this connection to their community. I think that they felt that they were, in the documentary, Ken Seide, Ed Seide's son, says that his dad felt like he was the caretaker of the community, that that was his role as an editor and a publisher. And so I think that they really felt that connection to the people there, to where they grew up. They had a very good childhood. They were very close to their parents. And I think that they felt that that was their role, to tell the news of the community and to be members of their community and to support it.
Well, and I think from what I gather from the documentary, they both also felt that having a strong newspaper was an important part of the survival of small town Iowa. And of course, they went through a time where small town Iowa was really at risk. And in fact, we have a clip from the documentary. And this is from, I believe, perhaps it's from an editorial that Ed wrote. Mm-hmm. During the farm crisis, he summed up what he saw as far-reaching consequences of the situation.
These are difficult times, and the survival of small towns is at stake. With these small towns hang the fate of our schools, our churches, our civic and social organizations, and the whole way of life that we have enjoyed so long in Iowa. It's not just the family farm that is threatened these days. Main Street hangs in the balance, too. There are those who would argue that there are too many towns anyway, and the elimination of some is just a fact of life. We don't buy that for a minute. True, in the Old West, when the mine played out and gold or silver was gone, some towns became ghost towns. But even then, others held on to a precarious existence. They refused to die. Now we visit them for their scenery, their pure air or water, their quality of life. This is the make-or-break season for small towns. It is the time of year when the difference between profit or loss can be wrapped up in 1 month. If every resident of every small town would make a conscious choice to shop their hometown first, it is likely that those hometowns will be around next year. Use it or lose it. It's as simple as that. Ed Seide.
Again, that's from an editorial that Ed Seide wrote in the Adair County Free Press. But it strikes me that the newspaper was part of what hung in the balance as well. A lot of small town newspapers went under. during the farm crisis.
Right, right. And I think Ed Seide was very involved in his community. He was on several boards, whether it be the school board or part of the Chamber of Commerce. And he felt that that was his role, was to be a part of his community, to help keep it growing and to support it during times like the farm crisis.
There is an interesting part of the documentary where we talk about the fact that, all right, we have an idea that journalists have to be objective and have to be able to report on what's going on and not get involved. Although working on a small town newspaper, that's almost impossible. I mean, Ed Seide was involved. He was on the school board at the same time his paper was reporting on the school board. It seems like a very different kind of relationship to the kind that we sort of think every journalist has.
Right. And I think that, you know, I think that you're right. I think some people would look at that as a conflict of interest. But I think because the integrity that Ed had, people really respected him in the community. And they knew that while he may be serving on the school board, that he would tell the story. He would tell it honestly and respectfully, and they trusted his instincts. And I think that, again, because of his integrity, they knew that they could trust him to not only be a part of the community, but to report on the community.
In a couple of minutes, I'm going to bring Ed Seide's widow, Linda Seide, who's now the editor and publisher of the Adair County Free Press, into the conversation. I'm also going to bring June Bauer into the conversation, who also happens to be your mother and author of a companion book to the documentary, The Seide Collection. And we will get more into the relationship of these two brothers. But as you learned more about Ed Seide and Hugh Seide, who we haven't really talked about, but he went off to Washington, D.C., and he had this remarkable career covering presidents, writing for Time magazine, traveling the world, and was very well known and very, very successful. I was really struck by how strong the relationship between the two brothers seemed to be, even though their paths were so different.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the things that struck me the most, too, is that, you know, I mean, a lot of siblings can be close, but their worlds were so different. I mean, one, like, as you mentioned, lived in Washington, D.C., traveled the world with presidents, several different presidents. And then you had Ed Seide, who continued the legacy of the newspaper. And so they really wouldn't see each other that much, but they did stay extremely close, really respected one another's work. And I think Hugh always, while he was traveling the world, his heart was always with that small town community and with his brother. And so that really touched me. And I hope to get that story into the documentary and was able to.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with Laurel Bauer Bergmeier. She is the writer and producer of the new documentary, The Seide Report, Life and Times of an Iowa Icon. It tells the story of the Seide family, who for four generations has published the Adair County Free Press in Greenfield, Iowa. And we'll talk more about the family and their legacy in a moment. We also want to hear from you. Is there a small town newspaper in your life that's important to you? What does it mean to a community to have a strong newspaper? Many small town papers have not survived. The Adair County Free Press is one that has. Tell us the story of your small town paper. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the Seide family and the newspaper they have published for four generations, 125 years, the Adair County Free Press. A new documentary tells their story. It's called The Seide Report, Life and Times of an Iowa Icon, and it premieres on Wednesday evening at 8:30 on Iowa Public Television. With me now is the producer and writer of the documentary, Laurel Bauer Bergmeier. And I want to introduce a couple more people in a moment, but before we get to that, let's listen to a little bit of the words, the writing of Ed Seide. And Ed was very much at peace with not being at a big city paper, and he describes a more meaningful experience that he had being the editor of a small town paper.
Personal involvement in a community is more satisfying than being a speck in a metropolis. The strength of the small town is that it attracts and holds people who realize this fact. The real satisfactions are here. Take it from an old country editor who once wrote news for a big city daily and never once in more than 3 years had a reader call and say thanks for a story, or for that matter, call to disagree with me. At the Free Press, the opposite is true. Our readers are the real editors, and we wouldn't have it any other way. Ed Seide.
That was just a moment, another from an editorial that Ed Seide wrote as the editor and publisher of the Adair County Free Press. And I want to bring in the present editor and publisher of the Adair County Free Press, Linda Seide, who is the widow of Ed Seide. Hello, Linda.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thanks for having me.
And now, I understand you were Ed's second wife. His career was very well established by the time you and Ed got married. Did you have any idea or understand his role in Adair County and in Greenfield when you married into this family?
None whatsoever. It's like living in a glass house. He wrote columns and talked about family and the things we did, and then he did his editorials. I had no idea that I was going to become Mrs. Adair County Free Press.
So what did
I was an art teacher.
What did it feel like to suddenly have such a public life, but also play such an important role in the community?
Very uncomfortable. I like to be behind the scenes. So just this conversation with you is a little uncomfortable. I'm more behind the camera. I started taking pictures and things like that. So it's uncomfortable.
Was there an event that really drove home to you the important role that your family plays in the community?
When we probably celebrated our 100th anniversary, the town came out and greeted everyone, and Hugh was here, and his family came back, and I realized then that was quite important that people cared for the paper.
Well, and Laurel was talking about how she wants to make sure that in this documentary the relationship between these two brothers comes through, and it really does, I think, come through. But you lived this. What did you think about the friendship that your husband Ed had with his brother Hugh? I mean, they did seem to be so close.
I was amazed. I was totally amazed. Hugh would, no matter where he was on a Wednesday, which is press day, and we have a deadline and have to get the paper out at such a time. And he would always call on Wednesday, and the staff would be waiting for Ed's editorial or Ed's column, and Ed would just lean back in his chair, put his feet up, and talk to Hugh for an hour, maybe even longer.
Wow.
Yeah, they loved each other. It was just very touching.
Well, and since they both went into the same field, you often see in families where siblings go into the same field that there is some competition or some jealousy between the two of them. Did you see that?
I saw respect. That's, I think, the relationship they had with each other. Ed respected what Hugh did, and Hugh thought Ed worked harder than he did and did such a wonderful job. It was the respect between two brothers and what they did, and they both were quality gentlemen journalists, and I think we miss that a little bit today.
Well, I was sort of trying to figure out, and Laurel, maybe you had a similar experience, almost trying to see if there was any jealousy or competition, and really, if I saw any, it almost seemed like Hugh was a little jealous of Ed.
Hugh was romantic when it came to Greenfield. He would walk the alleys and measure the trees and remember when he was young and had a romantic relationship with Adair County, not just with Greenfield. Ed worked it. You know, I mean, he was more of a realistic, you know, we're in trouble now, and could see things a little clearer than Hugh.
All right. So Hugh had enough distance where he was able to romanticize his hometown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and we actually have a clip from the documentary that demonstrates that. And this was written in 2005. So shortly before his death, Hugh Seide described a deep connection to Greenfield, his hometown. And this is from a letter to his lifelong friend, Dave Nichols. And it is read by that friend.
I've had a pretty good run of it back here in Washington, but I have never been able to recapture that small town environment for my family that I had experienced in Greenfield. Even in their brief visits to Adair County, my kids, and now my grand sense it, the openness of the sky and land, the concern and warmth of the people, the work of doing things that really matter. I never really left home. As you know, I kept coming back, and there was this bond that at times kept me sane. The families who stayed and worked and helped each other and laughed and accepted almost everything which came along are still the foundation of our civilization. Wes Jackson down at the Land Institute put it well. The farms, ranches, and small towns of this country are the last factors of decency. Perhaps that is a bit overstated, but there is truth in it.
Again, that was a letter from Hugh Seide to his friend Dave Nichols. And Laurel, in writing about the paper, in learning about the paper, can you describe for us a little bit about how the Adair County Free Press works? I mean, it publishes about 2,000 papers every week, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just know that, like as Linda mentioned, you know, Wednesdays are their busy days getting the paper out, and Ed was so involved in editorials, writing editorials every week, and he wrote columns every week, and as she mentioned, putting their family out there for everyone to learn about, you know, their lives. And I think I realize with a small town newspaper just how hard people work. It's an ongoing process. It never ends. You get your paper out on a Wednesday and you start right back on that Thursday or that afternoon on a Wednesday. And so to me, I think Linda could agree with this, that she and Ed rarely, if ever, took vacations. It's just an ongoing process. And it's something that in a small town, when you're getting that, you have a good staff, but so many of them are working very, very hard.
Well, and Linda, mm-hmm. I can imagine that the fact that you're a weekly newspaper dictates a little bit the kinds of things that you can cover and will cover, because you're not churning out day-to-day news.
Right.
You have to take a little bit of a longer view, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. I would never work on a daily. I think that would just be horrible. A weekly's very difficult too, but you have it spread out more, and it's easier to get pictures and work with the pictures and get somebody to take pictures if you can't make it. And
Well, I was struck by in looking at the documentary, there are actually on publication day, there are lines of people waiting to get their hands on the Adair County Free Press.
I think that is something that happened years and years ago when people, when we were in-house and we were printing it here, they just couldn't wait to get it. And I think it's just because we could put it in the mail, but people just kind of want to come in. We actually had a society editor that the crowd would group around the front, and we'd have coffee on, and the society editor would sell Avon. Because she had a trapped, a group of people. So.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, that's terrific. Well, and you do have, I mentioned that you publish 2,000 papers a week.
Mm-hmm.
How many subscribers do you have?
I think we're around 1,200.
All right. And how many, well, maybe you don't know the exact breakdown of this, but do you have a lot of people who subscribe to the paper who've been gone from Greenfield for a long time? Is this sort of their letter from home every week?
Yes, we do. It surprises me how many we have from out of state. But then I get letters to the editor from these people thanking me for putting old pictures in, and there's my grandmother or, information. Yeah, it's a touchstone. It's a contact.
This hour, we're talking about a new documentary called The Seide Report, Life and Times of an Iowa Icon, and it tells the story of the Seide family that has been operating the Adair County Free Press now for four generations. Documentarian Laurel Bauer Bergmeier is here along with Linda Seide, editor and publisher of the Adair County Free Press. And I also want to bring June Bauer into the conversation now. She is the author of a companion book to the documentary called The Seide Collection. Hello, June.
Hello.
Thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, and Laurel was talking earlier about how her interest was piqued by these remarkable photographs that she saw in a calendar. And I think that's where you started to come in. What did you see in these pictures that made you want to do more?
They're really beautiful works of art. Many of them, as Linda has pointed out, being an art teacher, they have the proper composition. The lighting is just excellent, and it really goes back a lot to K.H., Ed and Hugh's father. He's the one that started taking photos and built a dark room in their basement, and you could just tell he really had an eye for what a good photograph is. And most of the photographs that we're using in the book were from the 30s and 40s and 50s, and a lot of that is K.H. who took those pictures. And they are just beautiful, and I was interested in being involved primarily through Laurel because I always like her documentaries that she makes, and when she said these pictures were here and Linda wanted to do a book, it just seemed like a perfect fit.
Well, and these pictures are remarkable. I have read a lot of small-town newspapers over the years, and in a lot of small-town newspapers, you see pictures, you know, two people standing up in front of something, and which is nice. but these pictures are amazing. I mean, I get the sense that this was a real passion for KH. And Linda, did Ed ever talk about his dad's passion for photography?
Yes, I asked Ed once why he really didn't have it, Ed would get pictures, like I, you know, like June said, of people standing there and things like that. Hugh had the talent to do pictures, and Hugh wrote a book in college with his college professor, and so that was quite young. And I think Hugh probably took quite a few of these pictures when he was in college and high school too. But Ed just didn't have the love of the photography. He would go, it would be work to him. So that's why I took over taking pictures for Ed.
Wow. And did you know about all of these pictures? When did you discover?
No, I really didn't know about them. I discovered those when we were in the old Free Press building. We had to rewire, buy new computers, do new software, tear out the walls in order to rewire. And there's a little balcony up in the back, and there were boxes and boxes and boxes of these. They're glass negatives, large negatives, and that's why the quality is so nice.
Well, I was going to ask that question because the way that they were reproduced in the documentary was just beautiful, and I thought, was there an extensive amount of work done on these pictures? Or so you have the glass negatives, so they can be as pristine and beautiful as they ever were?
Yes, I have the glass negatives. In fact, I do prints of these and sell prints, and it's quite successful. People really love them.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And do you have a favorite that you could describe for us? This is a very—it's not a visual medium.
The first one is May Snow, and we can relate to that,
right?
Can't we? And it's on the square in Greenfield in an old car, and you can actually see the snowflakes coming down.
Wow!
It's so vivid, and that was the first print I did.
There was a picture that really struck me. It must have been from the Adair County Fair, and maybe it was kart racing or something like that. But it was taken from a low angle, and you can see this incredibly powerful horse. And there's just really, you can feel the power in this picture. Mm-hmm. And I think about, you know, images that I've seen from county fairs all over the place that don't really capture that feeling. But you're right there. Mm-hmm. You can almost hear the hooves beating the ground.
Yeah, their sense of depth and perspective, it was just amazing. It was like he laid on the ground to get that picture.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you can see the hoofs and them straining on the... Yes, I know what picture you're talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, me too. Well, and it's amazing that these pictures were kept. Did anybody think about this? Was this foresight on somebody's part, or were they just overlooked?
I don't think the CITES ever threw anything away. I have a massive amount of archives. And so in order to keep the archives, I formed a new business called the CITE Collection, which owns the archives, the prints, and things like that, to keep it away from the free press in case something happens.
Right. Well, were you the one that discovered these boxes, or did somebody see them and know enough to say, wait, here is something valuable?
A helper who was helping me tear things out and rewire said, look at this. And I went, oh, look at that. And then I knew what we had.
Oh, my gosh.
And I just started working on it.
Well, I can imagine that there are a lot of organizations that probably had similar collections, although these are remarkable photographs. But I can imagine someone just saying, oh, old pictures, let's throw these out.
And they did. And they did. Many small community businesses that were bought by larger conglomerates rewired everything, threw them out, they were in the way, and they're gone. It's just sad. It really is.
Well, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. This hour, we're talking about the new documentary, The CITE Report, Life and Times of an Iowa Icon. The documentary premieres on Wednesday evening at 8:30 on Iowa Public Television. And with me is Linda CITE. She is editor and publisher of the Adair County Free Press. Also, June Bauer is here. She's author of a companion book to the documentary called The CITE Collection. And Laurel Bauer Bergmeier, the writer and producer of the documentary, is here as well. And you're welcome to join the conversation at 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about a new documentary called The CITE Report, Life and Times of an Iowa Icon. It tells the story of the CITE family, who for four generations has been publishing the Adair County Free Press. A CITE is still the publisher of the Adair County Free Press, Linda CITE, editor and publisher. She's also the widow of Ed CITE, who was the editor and publisher for many, many years. With me is Laurel Bauer Bergmeier. She is the producer and writer of the documentary, and June Bauer, author of a companion book to the documentary. It's called The CITE Collection, and it features many of these amazing photographs that we've been talking about. June, when you first started looking at the pictures, was there one picture that you could describe for us that really captured your imagination?
The farm scenes, being a farm girl, I was just overwhelmed by the beauty of the farm scenes. It would be old combines or old tractors working in the fields, making hay, something like that, against a sky that was just beautiful with cumulus clouds. And those were the ones that really caught my eye. And, of course, I loved the pictures of the children, the pictures of the horses. That's how we broke the book down, was those various categories of different things. That, because there were thousands and thousands. I think Laurel had at least 13,000 scanned. But there were so many to go through, but those really stood out to me.
Wow. Well, and Laurel, when you first started making this documentary, did you imagine that you would have this kind of imagery to work with?
Well, I knew that we had the opportunity for that. I think that was one of the main reasons why I wanted to do the documentary. And when I first met Linda, she had already scanned some photograph or several photographs. And we talked, and she said there's so many more, and we just knew that they needed to be scanned. And so I was able to get a grant through the State Historical Society of Iowa to hire some people. And as my mom, June, just mentioned, she's, you know, we were able to hire these two, and they scanned over 13,000. So in a way, I was very lucky to have this, but it was so hard to choose just enough to go into an hour documentary, because there are so many more. That's why it's nice to have a book, and because there's just so many to see.
Absolutely. Well, I also love the fact that KH didn't just take pictures for the newspaper. He took a lot of pictures of his boys.
Yes.
And that is just wonderful. And their dog.
Spot.
Right, who must have lived for a very long time because he was in pictures with very young boys and pictures with boys when they went off to college.
Yes, Spot was around for a while.
And
he
those
was
are
a town dog.
Yeah.
Everybody knew Spot.
Well, and those were some of my favorites, too, the boys with the dog and the boy. I mean, you know, Linda and I looking at them on several occasions and my mom and I looking at them. Those were some of our favorites as well, as they were just adorable pictures. Their clothes tell the time that they were in. And I think they also showed the closeness of them. So those were some of my favorites as well.
Absolutely. Now, of course, times have changed a lot, and the Adair County Free Press has gone through a lot of changes as well. We have a little excerpt from an article that Hugh Seide wrote in Time magazine about some of those inevitable changes and the bittersweet changes that were taking place. Here's just a bit of that.
After 108 years, its glorious Wednesday night baritone was not to be heard. No more would it summon folks to come and read how kids' crepe paper birthdays rivaled royal cotillions, or how the class dullard shone like a bright star. True, the newspaper lives on, and I hope it will be rich with the fragments of life of Greenfield. But the renowned iron patriarch that stamped these small stories into history has been whisked away to oblivion. In the office, there are only low voices and the tick of computers heralding the new century. The clove-like smell of printer's ink has already been subdued by cleaning solvents and fresh paint. The absence is marked, though, by a great gaping hole in the back shop, as if a huge molar had been yanked. The arguments are of cost-effectiveness and the inexorable consolidation that comes with our culture. Still, there is melancholy when a friend moves on. Hugh Seide.
And Linda, when the Adair County Free Press stopped being published on site, I mean, that is a good business decision. A lot of newspapers have had to make that decision. What was the mood around the newspaper? How did Ed feel about that?
He was very unhappy. You lose your independence. You have to print it when somebody else says, we have a space for you, you can print it this day. Fortunately, our printing plant is very good to us and gave us a spot that was similar to when we were printing.
And where is it printed now?
Down in Creston, Creston News Advertiser.
All right, so it's still close by.
It's about a half an hour drive.
How did you decide that you would take over when Ed passed?
I really didn't have a choice.
Well, you did have a choice. You didn't have to do this. And it's not your background. It's not your history.
Ed wanted me to do it. He thought I could do it. He said, you know, use my editorials, use what you've learned, just get a good staff around you, and you can continue until you find somebody that would be a suitable buyer.
All right. And what do you feel your role is now? Are you marking time? Are you just waiting? Or is this something that's become part of you, too?
I feel like I've been kind of a soldier. doing what I think Ed would want me to do. I'm sure that will end sometime. I don't know if it would be tomorrow or 10 years. But if somebody suitable comes along and Ed gave me who he would want, you know, it wouldn't be a conglomerate. It would be family-owned. It would be somebody that would take care of the staff and the town. And if that comes around, I would probably act on it.
And I'm struck by the fact that KH didn't try to push his boys into journalism. At least that's not the impression that I got. How about Ed's kids and Hugh's kids? None of them are interested in the family business?
Ken came back. That would be Ed's son. My stepson came back and ran it for about 3 years
and then wanted to move on and get his master's at Iowa State and teach. Then he got a job at Meredith. I'm not sure if he got his master's or not, but then he got a job at Meredith and went on his way. Hugh's son, Ted, came back and ran it for a while, and he missed being back in Maryland around his family. So they tried to plant, we've tried to plant somebody, but nothing took root.
Right, right. And how big is the staff of the paper today?
I have one full-time, well, two counting me, and three in-house part-time and two that work from their homes.
All right, so five part-time employees, mm-hmm. two full-time employees.
And I have a lot of people volunteer to get pictures and do things when I can't.
You can join our conversation. We're talking about the Adair County Free Press this hour, but we'd love to hear your stories, your thoughts about small-town newspapers and the importance of small-town newspapers in the state of Iowa. And Laurel, I'm having a hard time recalling the exact statistic, but part of the conversation in the documentary is about Iowa as a newspaper state, and we still have more newspapers per capita than any other state?
Yes, that's correct. Mm-hmm. I received that information from the Iowa Newspaper Association. So while the newspapers have disappeared over the years in Iowa and in other states, we do have more per capita. And I think I can't remember the exact number, but it's 360-some, I think, newspapers.
Wow. We have this email from Mike somewhere in central Iowa. He says, we've lived in a number of small towns in Iowa in the last 30 years and perceive a drift toward personal interest stories rather than public issues requiring research journalism. What do you think is behind the trend? And first of all, I mean, do any of you see that as a trend? I don't know. Laurel or Linda, do you want to try that one?
Well, you know, I don't see that trend with the Adair County Free Press. And I know that for years and years, Ed, you know, he would write editorials and he would write columns, but especially his editorials were about worldwide concerns. And I don't know if Linda can talk a little bit more about that, but I can see what he's saying. I think that that can happen, but I haven't seen that with the Adair County Free Press.
Linda?
Well, Ed's slant on everything was hard news. We wanted to cover the school board, the city council, the chamber. We thought getting that news and informing the community is probably the most important thing, and that's what I stress. We have an occasional feature on somebody. I do see a lot of, I guess Ed would call it fluff, of you know, doing features all the time. But the hard news is what's important to the free press.
Well, and again, with my personal experience with small town newspapers, I think that there's a difference in newspaper culture. I have certainly lived in places or been mm-hmm. familiar with places where the culture of the newspaper was to publish fluff. I mean, some people call mm-hmm. it refrigerator journalism because they publish articles that they want people to cut out and stick on their refrigerator. Mm-hmm. And of course, the Adair County Free Press has done plenty of those kinds of things over the years as well. In the documentary, there was one man talking about how when he, I think he was showing a steer mm-hmm. at the mm-hmm. Adair County Fair, and how he knew that the mm-hmm. pinnacle of the experience for him mm-hmm. would be when he was on the front page of the Adair County Free Press above the fold.
Right. And I think that that's important as well, because I think that we can get, you know, news of the world from any source today. I mean, there's so many outlets, and I think it's nice to have, while you still get hard news of the community, whether it be, you know, the school board going on or what's happening on different committees. I think it's nice to have people profiled. I think it's nice to have people want to see themselves in the paper. I think that that's just part of a small town, and it's a way for people to get their local news. I mean, to keep connected.
Right. And nobody else is covering what's going on in Greenfield mm-hmm. for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
There was someone again in the documentary who was talking about, okay, they publish 2,000 papers every week, but they have 90% penetration in the community. So, mm-hmm. you know, Linda, that makes me think about the power of this voice that you have with this paper in mm-hmm. the community. I mean, it's a limited sphere of influence, but that is quite a reach within your community.
Well, you know, you sell one paper, the whole family reads it, then hands it to grandma and grandpa. You know, I mean, they may not buy, you know, everybody buy a paper, but it gets read by many people. It's handed.
Right. And so, Laurel, in making this documentary about the Adair County Free Press, did you also think about these other small town newspapers in Iowa and the role that they play in the communities?
Yeah, I definitely did. As I mentioned earlier, I really think that they are so important for their communities because they keep that local sense of whether it be news, what's going on in the community, but about their neighbors, about each other. And I don't think it has to be fluff. I don't think that that's what it is. I think it's just that connection that I think both Ed and Hugh kept. You know, Hugh had the pinnacle career for many writers as a writer for Time magazine. But he still thought of this small town community and held it close to his heart and saw the importance of it and the people there. And Ed always continued that feeling and wrote about it in the newspaper. So I do think that small town newspapers and, you know, maybe for myself have realized how important they are. I work in Des Moines, but I commute from Creston and we have our own paper. But reading the Adair County Free Press for weeks on end through this process, I've come to realize how important they are for communities as well.
Well, and June, I know you have experience with small town news as well, but also looking through all of these photographs, you also published some of the words of the Seide brothers, Ed and Hugh. I'm struck not just by the power of this newspaper in this community, but the fact that truly gifted journalists also were the founders and operators of this paper. That is not true for every small town community.
Oh, you're so right, because not everybody has been born and bred into the business like the boys were, because, I mean, they were working in that office from the time they were little kids, and so they really understood good journalism, and you don't see that in all papers. And then we did use excerpts all the time from both of their writings, and I can give you just a little example of Ed.
Sure.
Where he says, "You learn to write with clarity when you live so close to the people you write about," and that just, you know, typifies how he did write. And then Hugh, just one of the things we have in there, he says, "No mountains or seashore or badlands, just the greatest spectacle of all, fertile, productive land as far as the eye can see. I can't get it out of my system." And that's the kind of things that he wrote all the time about Greenfield and Iowa.
Wow. Well, and Linda, how does it feel? You clearly married into the Seide family legacy. You are carrying that legacy on your shoulders right now as the editor and publisher of the Adair County Free Press. But this is a story that not many people outside of Greenfield really knew before now. How does it feel to have people paying attention and learning about this family?
I don't see much difference.
Yeah.
I was very pleased with the premiere and the turnout there. It's just it feels good. I really don't know how to answer that.
You still have a paper to put out. Sorry.
Yeah, I still have a paper to put out. It's still work.
Laurel,
nothing has changed much.
Laurel, what do you want people to take away from the documentary?
I think three things. I think that the Seide legacy, and as we've been talking about, the importance of the small town newspaper to its community, that there's still a place for it. And I also think the Seide brothers. I think Ed and Hugh were two special journalists. I mean, they were extremely talented writers. I wish I could write like them. And I think that that's something to hold on to. And I hope people get those three elements from the documentary.
Well, Laurel, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Laurel Bauer Bergmeier is the producer and writer of the new documentary, The Seide Report, Life and Times of an Iowa Icon. It premieres on Wednesday evening at 8:30 on Iowa Public Television. June Bauer, thank you.
Thank you.
June Bauer is the author of a companion book to the documentary, The Seide Collection. And Linda Seide, thank you very much.
And thank you, too.
Linda Seide is editor and publisher of the Adair County Free Press. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.